for some politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and
Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. It's me, Mr. FSP. Don't want to do it because I do it for you. Rocking the MIC solo on a Saturday. Today is February the 1st. February 1st. 1 month of 2014 has come and gone. Now, the shortest month of the calendar year is taking shape. Super Bowl 48 happens tomorrow. Seattle Seahawks take on the Denver Broncos, I should say, for the right to claim who is truly the best team in the NFL. I said it before, pundits have said these were the two best teams in the NFL prior to the season even starting. Both teams proved those folks right. Some folks have said that Denver is the way better team, and they're going to win, I believe, by 7. I think that's a little bit much, but if Manning and company gets out in front pretty good, they might cover. They might cover. We'll see if that part is true from the pundits. But on today's show, ladies and gentlemen, I will give my opinion on college athletes unionizing, and I'll give a breakdown of the Super Bowl position by position. I'm not going to go right guard, left guard. I'm going to go line play versus line play, so on and so forth. Along with that, I've been trying really, really hard over the past week, and maybe it's because I started late, but I've been trying to fill this Super Bowl spreadsheet, office pool, if you want to call it that. That's what it pretty much is, but because of where I work, I really can't do that, and it's not really that atmosphere to the Internet. I'm using social media to get folks to get on board. Sadly, ladies and gentlemen, it's not working. I've got less than half of a board filled. It's a $10 per square board. Now, I'm trying to figure out here. People are willing to put $50 down on one square. I give them a low-income, low-budgeted option. It's not a really gigantic payout. They're shying away from it. Now, for those that actually, jumped on board, thank you very much. But it looks like I'm going to have to return their money. I have no problem with that. None whatsoever. It's part of the game. I was going to complete it had I got at least 75 of the 25 of the 100 squares filled. But I at least got 75 filled, had a plan to roll over and or quarters or give the money back. I had the option prepared. But because people didn't want to join and get on board, can't do that. It's all right. It's okay. I still love you guys anyway. But today might be an abbreviated show because I'm running by myself. But if you want to call in and you want to be part of the program, you can call in on the Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com phone line. That's 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com, where winners win and players play. So go there today and make some money and have some fun. Special lines on the Super Bowl. UFC's happening tonight. A lot of great things going on. But anyway, let's talk about this unionization stuff. College unions. Sports unions. Now, it took place several years ago. I mean, many, many years ago. It was, I believe, according to the Huffington Post, 1936, when the university, Howard University, some say the real HU, located in Washington, D.C., decided to actually not play a game on strike. Howard University was supposed to take on Virginia Union. But the team declined to take the field. So they just decided to protest. A little bit later, two players from Louisiana State University, LSU, for those who didn't know the full name, two of the players were dismissed from the team because they started or attempted to start a union. That same year, University of Pittsburgh football players, who were supported by Coach Jock Sutherland, presented a list of three demands to the administration before they would agree to participate in the Rose Bowl. The dispute arose from the fact that the university had made $100,000 off of their Rose Bowl win the previous year, while each player on the team was given $7.50 or less than $250.18. I'm going to read that again. The dispute arose from the fact that the university had made $100,000 off their previous Rose Bowl appearance. Each player got $7.50, which equated to less than $250 as 18. The administration acceded to the players' demands. The athletic director, Don Harrison, resigned, and the chancellor, John Gabbert Bowman, vowed to institute reform to bring players in line. Now, look, the university, and we're talking about like in the early 40s, early 30s, or late 30s, a university made $100,000 off of its college team appearing in the Rose Bowl. And yet, each player only got $7.50. Less than $250 for the entire team. That's the backdrop of what we're talking about here. Labor laws. Now, most recently, the Northwestern football players, or Northwestern University's football players, actually was able to create a union or start a union. Thereby, team leader Kane Coulter, they signed cards and submitted a petition to unionize with the regional office of the National Labor Relations Board, NLRB, in Chicago. Player-centered attempt to organize, these football players have done what the college sports system and American higher education have failed to do over the span of more than 100 years. The attempt to create the College Athletics Players Association symbolizes the necessity for and the importance of acknowledging a heretofore unrecognized labor force denied the full measure of protections according to the status. Now, here's the kicker here. On behalf of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, which is the NCAA, Chief Legal Officer Remy, say that again, Chief Legal Officer Donald Remy stated, and I quote, "Student athletes are not employees within any definition of the National Labor Relations Act or the Fair Labor Standards Act." He went on to say, "Protecting young people from the dangers of exploitive athletic practices of the time is what he's trying to do, and college athletes have no right to organize." He is pretty much saying, who are you? You don't have any right to organize. You don't belong in the Fair Labor Act. How are you fair labor? I mean, how are you labor? Pretty much, you're getting a scholarship. You go out there, you perform, you get good grades. We make money off of it. The millions now, as opposed to the $100,000 that one of the universities received in a Rose Bowl appearance, went from $100,000 to now millions and quite possibly billions of dollars that these universities are seeing is the fruit of the players' labor ability to get and find star players. So basically what, you know, NCAA's legal executive, Chief Legal Officer Donald Remy is saying is, these are the returns on our investment. So therefore, you don't deserve anything other than what we're giving you. I mean, these kids, yes, I got it. People say, well, they're getting a free education, da-da-da-da-da. Is it free? No, it's not. It's not free. It's not free at all. Because if this kid, who you recruited as a top player, turns out to be a dud, his scholarship is pulled. He's still allowed to be at the university, but then the money has to come from somewhere else. Or she, depending on the sport. So then it becomes, well, we give you a partial scholarship, but then you have to pay for your tuition, the rest of your tuition, room and board. This isn't a beneficial solely to the student situation. These colleges are making money hand over fist. Let me read something else here. All this is according to the Huffington Post. The action by the Northwestern football team, supported by the United Steelworkers, emanates from a long history of collusions over the status of athletes and their rights on college campuses. Flickering indicators of college athlete unrest have been reverberating throughout the past year. When college football players in the fall of 2013 marked All Players United, APU, on their gear, a protest in which Colgate Northwestern football players participated in, they were engaging in a struggle and enacting a script that started at least 77 years ago. Again, the first one that took place, Howard University declined to take the field versus Virginia Union in 1936, just before the game. University of Pittsburgh players pretty much telling the university, before they're going out on the field, they had three demands. Because the school previously last year, when they participated in the Rose Bowl, received $100,000, but each player only got $7.50, less than $250 for the entire team. This was way back when, again, early 40s, late 30s, and the money keeps flowing in. I got a call in on the fantasy. I got two callers calling in on the fantasy sportsbook and casino. .com hotline where winners win and players play. Let's go there today and place your wagers. I believe I recognize one of these numbers, and I have two of them, but let me bring in this first caller from the 240. Let's get him on. Call from 240. Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Unionize.
Hello.
Unionize.
You want them to unionize.
Unionize. That's right. Way overdue, way overdue. You know, the NCAA is a good old boy, nationally known nonprofit organization. I can't see any argument for them not for these kids not to unionize. I can't see it. I just don't understand it. I mean. Here's a lot of things. Here's something that a lot of people don't know or don't understand about the college athletes when they play. They are responsible for their injuries. They are responsible. If you go out and you're playing for, you know, university of who's a what or what, you know, university of whatever, I'm on CBS, and blow your knee out, in the third quarter of you running 145 yards in the game so far, guess who's on the hook? Not the NCAA, not the college. You are.
We're talking about Willis McGahee when he got that life insurance or that policy championship.
I am surprised the NCAA allowed him to get some insurance. The way them jokers be acting like the Gestapo and these guys' life and these young ladies' life, because a lot of it just doesn't make sense. Some of it does, a lot of it doesn't. They've gotten so into like crazy nuances that it's just ridiculous. We could do this whole show on that stuff, Slum. But
well, the show's gonna be on that.
I'm going to keep it short and sweet, unionize.
Okay. Well, I got one more call, but let me get this in first before I get to that call. 1945, Wake Forest players were offered $100 incentives from boosters to overcome their reluctance to play in the Gator Bowl. Players countered with a proposal that starters should get paid $150. As Richard Southall, 2012, noted in Sports and Higher Education Issues and Controversies, the players were not uncomfortable turning their backs on amateurism and getting paid. They simply felt starters should be paid more than non-starters. That's an issue that some people saying might be the case. Not just starters, but the star players. I go back to Denard Robinson when he was at Michigan. His jersey just sold like crazy. The university took all that money. When Jay Billis, not too long ago, put out a tweet or a message about how, you know, the NCAA is so hypocritical, talking about not making money off these guys, but they have the likeness and the names of these players on the back of their jerseys that they're selling on the NCAA website. Johnny Manziel, this was in the height of the Johnny Manziel controversy this past summer. Then all of a sudden the next day or hours later, those jerseys are pulled and the names are pulled off of the back of those jerseys. I'm going to take you back to Ed O'Bannon at UCLA. He and a group of players, they sued EA Sports, NCAA, and some other folks because their likeness was being used in NCAA football and basketball. By the way, EA Sports has pulled out of that contract. There will no longer be NCAA college football or basketball games made because of the result of the lawsuit by Ed O'Bannon and those folks. So if you have a copy of NCAA football, basketball, or whatever, you better cherish it. It's not being made, at least not by by EA Sports anymore. But the lawsuit continues because everyone else except for the NCAA has settled out of court with Ed O'Bannon and those folks. Unionization could put an end to some of that stuff. We're going to get to this call from 360 and see what we got coming in here. Call from 360, welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. Please state your name.
You already know who it is. It's the Rev, baby.
Oh, what's up? What's up? I'm glad you're on the line. You know, I'm being there tomorrow with you. Jerry's going to be out. But we're talking about, as you heard, unionization in the college ranks. This thing the Northwest is pulling off. It's not new, but the level to which they've taken it is new. So talk to me, Rev. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, Reverend Fantasy, co-host of The Master Plan, who called in on the Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com hotline where winners win and players play. Tell us your thoughts on this. My cousin said it short and sweet, unionize. Give us your information on what you think.
I got one word to say. The National Criminal Association, which is called the NCAA, they've stolen billions and billions of dollars from student athletes. Now, granted, they give up money in regards to education, but they're not the ones that are really giving up the education. It's the colleges itself that are fronting that money. But I agree. I'm totally on board with this. This action by Northwestern players. Anytime we can get back at the NCAA, I'm like totally NCAA. Anything we can do to get back at these guys, I think student athletes should be paid. I don't think they should be paid a lot, but I just don't see how it's fair when the NCAA can sell a product with your name basically on a game or your name on a jersey, and you get none of the money. That blows my mind, that they can market you, basically, and pimp you out. The NCAA is a pimp. It pimps student-athletes out and makes money off them, and they just give them they give them back crumbs, just enough to survive. So I'm all with it, man. I think it's a good thing. And kudos to Northwestern for stepping up and doing something like that.
Well, again, I'm referring back to the HuffingtonPost.com story, the significance of college athletes unionizing. I'm referring back to the NCAA's chief legal officer, Donald Remy. This is what Donald Remy had to say, if you missed it. Student athletes are not employees within any definition of the National Labor Relations Act or the Fair Labor Standards Act. You further know that college athletes have no right to organize. This is, of course, an association that recently asserted in court filings that it had no duty to protect college athletes while also noting that it was founded to protect young people from the dangerous and exploitative athletic practices of the time. So it's pretty much an oxymoron. You're saying you were formed to protect the kids from being exploited, when you're the biggest exploitative thing out there. And again, I made a point that even the colleges, they look at these guys as nothing but commodities. They are what these athletes bring to them is return or their investment. Because got from high school, you're paying a scholarship for, flounders out as a freshman or a sophomore, you reduce the scholarship, or you pull the scholarship, then that kid has to then find a way to pay his tuition. He can stay at the school. He can stay at the school, but his scholarship is gone, and he has to pay for everything out of his pocket when he couldn't do that to get to the college in the beginning. So you're saying that Rev, but people are saying that the education they're getting is more than enough compensation? Some of these cats don't even go to school. Some of these cats have never taken a test. If you look at the interviews of these kids, they go to some of these schools, and they're supposed to be able to converse and use words that are not street jargon. I'm going to give you a prime example. Y'all can hate me and call me whatever you want, but Marshawn Lynch, to me, I understand he might have anxieties of speaking to the press or whatever the case may be. He grew up out here in Oakland. He's a product of the Oakland school system, which is not a good school system, by the way. He went to one of the best educational schools in the country, Cal Berkeley. Less than 20% of the applicants in Cal Berkeley get accepted. This guy, somehow, some way, I believe he left early, but he did 3 years at Cal Berkeley. I also know Deshaun Jackson. I believe he graduated from Cal Berkeley. Aaron Rodgers graduated from Cal Berkeley. Now, we're going to take those three people. We're going to do an interview with all three of them. I mean, not Deshaun. Marshawn, yeah, boss. Yeah, that's just the way it is, boss. I understand that's his personality. You go to Cal Berkeley, that's probably going to be something you do with your friends, not in a public forum. Deshaun Jackson, first couple years in the league, you know, he was very expressive. He's an explosive guy. He's a very animated guy. He still has some of that slang in his vernacular. Got it. His behavior wasn't always, you know, the best. Got it. His interaction with the media was somewhat on par to somebody that got somewhat of an education. Aaron Rodgers, got it. Darling, whatever it is. But my point that I'm getting to is you can't tell me that 90% of these kids that come out of urban cities, that come from nothing, they get pushed through the system because they are athletic, are truly getting a college education. They're getting the college experience, not the college education. That is my opinion. So I'm going to turn this back over to the Rev. I want you to give us some background or some information on where do you see this going if this union spreads like wildfire, the Northwestern players have done. Where do you see it going, some ups, some downs? And then I know my cousin just wants them to unionize, but I want him to give some great benefits to the unionization process. But, Rev, step up to the plate, and let's get a sermon on what I just asked.
Hey, FSP, hey, man. Real quick, to answer your question, a little runoff of that, I think, honestly, I totally agree with you. Your comments were dead spot on. We know for a fact that 90% of these student athletes, you know, that go to college aren't there to receive the academic accolades. They're there for one reason, to make millions of dollars and go pro. Let's just call it, you know, a deuce. We know what it is, and let's don't try to hide it, you know. And, yeah, I mean, I totally agree. Like, I think if the NCAA continues this injustice to these kids, then I think one way of fixing it, one remedy would be, okay, if they don't want to, if others follow what Northwestern's done and keeps unionizing with what they've done, I think the NCAA might push back, you know. And I don't know I think they're going to be back into a corner, honestly. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think they could spread like wildfire. And one thing I think that one thing that could happen is all pro sports we talk about the NBA, they have a one-year period where you have to attend, you know, be out of high school. You have the NFL where you got to do 2 years. I think that the possibility of those timelines could be waivable maybe in the near future. That could be one of the fallouts from this unionization that these student-athletes are doing, because it's going to force the NCAA into a position. But pro sports are going to have to – it's going to have to adjust, you know, their second and third order effects. So I think we need to think big picture. And, I think that with this, there's going to be second and third order effects, to answer your question. And I wish that pro sports would just go ahead and waive that period of time, because, like I said, there's kids that come – prime examples, Kobe Bryant's of the world that come out of high school, you know, and made it in the NBA, and they're going to be future Hall of Famers. And, you know, what's really going to college for 1 year doing for a student-athlete in basketball? Really, you know, what's 1 year of them attending college? Are they going to get their degree in that time frame? No. Are they going to be able – all they're doing is risking themselves for potential earnings. That's the only thing they can make out of it. If a kid's projected to be the number one pick in the draft, but he's got to attend Duke, i.e. Jabari Parker, if Parker would have came out after his senior year in high school, he would have been the consensus. He could have been the number one pick or number two pick in the draft. This kid's got to attend Duke. Who's to say he doesn't blow his knee out and never makes another dime in his life, when he could have been making millions of dollars right from the start? So I just think we need to step back and think about what's going on. But the NCAA, I mean, they're going to be backed into a position here with what Northwestern did. And I think others should go ahead and push the bill also. I think all colleges should fall in line with that. And it's going to be interesting to see what the NCAA is going to do, you know?
So, I mean, I'm looking for, I guess, give me a solid pro to college athletes, because it starts with football, but it would extend to every athletic sport, or every sport each college has. Not on Division II level, not on D2, because I got another argument for that. But on the NCAA level, give me one strong benefit to them unionizing. Because here's what I say. If they do get a union and they decide to strike, first thing that's going to happen is the colleges are going to take their scholarships away from them. That's what I say. But give me your thoughts, and then I'm going to go to my cousin.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about. Yeah, if they strike, yeah, there's the potential for them to lose their scholarships. I'm sure the NCAA can always pull the rug from out under them at any time, so they still don't have a foot to stand on. I think one pro to them unionizing, like we just talked about, just the benefits of having that, the medical benefits for future, you know, medical issues. You know, a guy's playing football and he has, you know, concussion issues down the road, you know, that could possibly cover him, you know, medically, when he wouldn't have got a dime from nobody. And the guy, you know, could have had, you know, possible traumatic brain injury syndrome. And he would have been paying millions of dollars out of his pocket just for medical expenses. So I think that's one pro to it, to answer your question.
All right. Mike?
What you want to know?
Give me some extreme pros to the unionization process. Or not the process, but to these teams. Or this colleges.
To the teams, to the colleges, or to the NCAA,
for the players. For the players.
Well, you know what, Victor? I really don't like to focus on the players, because they're not the problem. They really aren't the problem. But I'll do it, because that's how you communicate. Because, I mean, that's all we talk about is players, 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 players. And every time there's an issue, we talk about players. And I point you in the right direction, but we always go back there. But let's do that. Number one.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm serious. No, that's not. No, that's
I'm asking you what's the benefit. I'm asking you to name a lot of benefits for the players who have a union.
Hold on. I know what you're asking me, right? I'm not stupid. What I'm saying to you is that the problem ain't the players. We need to stop focusing. Right. We need to stop focusing on them because they not the problem. The NCAA is the problem. But to answer your question, right, what benefit is it to the players? Number one, you have an ability to, for better medical, right? You have some type of semblance of some type of help for your medical issues, because you could develop a whole rack of medical issues as you're in there. Number two, you have the ability to stand up as a man and say yes, no, whatever, or challenge some of these NCAA rules or infractions that they impose on these kids that are just ridiculous. I mean, we've seen it so many times over the years. We ain't even thinking about it right now. They've done so much crap over the years. I can't even remember what exactly they've done, but they've done like crazy stuff, like pull somebody's scholarship for catching $20 at a car wash or something, or getting extra money. I remember the time they was scrutinizing some little boy because his peoples had bought him some kind of car or something. Man, they're always trying to protect their commodity, which is the student, from something else. But see, the NCAA is so used to having everything both ways, it's crazy. They so used to having their cake and eat it too, it's ridiculous. They're going to sit there and say that these kids aren't employees, right? And then that allows them to say, okay, well, they don't have the right to unionize. Wait a minute. Who are you to tell these Americans that we can't form some type of union or something? Who are you to tell us that? You can't do that. What is that? You know what I mean? And then you have a lot of these issues. If one of these student athletes speak out on something, if they say what's on their mind about something, NCAA come down and crack down on that. No, man, it's just ridiculous. These kids really should unionize. It's long overdue. It's about time. You know what I mean? Because the scales of this balance is so out of whack. It don't even make any sense. The NCAA has been making billions hand over fist for the past 20-some-odd years, and now you got the different conferences making their own network deals. Really, I mean, come on, you even got institutions making their own network deals. Come on, man, nah, and you can't guarantee these kids at least for the first, year or two after they've come out of college, if they don't go to the NFL or something like that, that they can get some kind of medical coverage, something. You know what I mean? You blow your knee out, get a concussion, bust your arm up, bust your ribs up, and you know how hard it is to get health insurance out here. You know that Obamacare, it's all right, but come on, man, really? Really, you would. I mean, the type of issues that you're gonna have after leaving, after banging your head up against 300-pound dudes. Come on, man, that's ridiculous. And for them to say that these kids ain't employees, that's even crazier. Crazy.
Well, and I agree with you on that, because the legal counsel for the NCAA, I think he's off in his assessment, because it's. These guys, they put so much money, guys and girls, because we're talking about basketball, baseball, softball, all these sports, not just football, and not just the male sports. You know, they put so much money in these universities, that these universities have these great buildings and great things and all this other stuff, off the backs of these star, quote-unquote, players. Now, one thing that I say is a benefit to a union and a detriment for the players and a detriment to the NCAA, if this were to go, you know, full-blown, you would have star players like Denard Robinson, who says, okay, my net worth to this university is XYZ. Johnny Manziel, his parents are already wealthy, but his net worth to Texas A&M is worth XYZ. So now, I understand my teammates are going to get a piece of the pie. I got it. This goes back to what the previous student that I mentioned said, that they feel starters should get paid more, which I really don't have a problem with because everybody wants to be a starter. But it says, okay, well, you know what? I'm making this university $10 million this football season in jersey sales alone. Okay? My teammates and I is what? Let's say 80 guys on the football team. Right? They're bringing home maybe $5,000 a season. Then you got some money on a basketball team, on a baseball team, soccer team, whatever it may be. So off his jersey sales alone, not including the boosters, not including, you know, the alumni, you've covered every athlete as far as some type of money, some type of pay within the union. So nobody's really that upset. Johnny is recognizable that Johnny makes all this money. It's recognized that because of him, we got this, and when Johnny leaves, things are going to change. Got it. But when Johnny decides he's going to do that, and Texas A&M says, no, not going to happen, and Johnny and the union strike, all the players strike, NCAA loses so much money, because then you have losses in TV revenue, at the door, jersey sales, ESPN, all these other shows, all these sports channels, they lose out because, you know, they no longer have the college aspect. Yes, ESPN, Fox, they've got the pros. But that stuff happens in the evening. So let's say it still goes down like that. Where do some of these big-name players go? I'm here to tell you, they're going to go to Division II. They're going to go play for South Dakota State. They're going to go play for what's that black and gold team? I can't remember the name of the team. The team that upset Michigan like 3-4 years ago.
Appalachian State.
There you go. Appalachian State. They're going to play for Appalachian State because they're playing under different rules. They're not unionized, but they have a playoff system, and the players are taken care of. And to be truthful, most of the good players in the NFL, and I'm just using the NFL right now, come from D2 schools. So now they go to these schools, still get a little bit of money, still get to be seen on a national spotlight because now D2 comes up. NCAA suffers majorly. So it then becomes a leverage issue for the players. You get into the
They got to do it collectively. It cannot do.
I'm just saying that
I'm with you, but I'm just piggybacking. They cannot make this individualized issue. They cannot come out of this with the prima donna free agent type of thing going on. It won't work then. But I guarantee you, this is going to be an ugly and long fight. Because the NCAA got long money. They got real long money and old money, too. So this is going to be real ugly. And they're going to fight it tooth and nail.
Well, you know what? I think that another point for unionizing for the players is there's no real rule for college coaches to just leave and go somewhere else. There's a buyout clause,
like the coach has to give back, you know, X amount of dollars of their contract. But after that, they're free to go with no penalty. But if a kid has a coach that recruited him, decides to leave for whatever reason to go to a new school, he has to sit out unless it's an extreme circumstance. And I think the NCAA instituted that maybe 3 or 4 years ago when Bobby Petrino left Arkansas and went to the Atlanta Falcons. I'm not sure if it was then or it was sometime around then, but there was a big issue that the players were like, you know what, why is this? Matter of fact, it got brought up again when Joe Pa had to resign from Penn State. You know, NCAA said, well, this is a special circumstance, so we're not going to penalize these guys for leaving Penn State due to the circumstances. We're going to let them go wherever they want and go play immediately. Why is that, you know, a case-by-case basis? If a coach can do it, who, of course, apparently is more valuable to the university in the long run than the player, and I can get that because the player is there from in basketball a year, two, three at the most. You don't have a Tim Duncan nowadays that stays in college basketball knowing you're going to be the number one pick that year and still come out as the number one pick. You don't have anybody like that in basketball right now. Like the ref said, you got this young cat that decided to go to Duke because he had to play college 1 year. He's messing up his draft stock, by the way. I'm glad you brought that up, Rev. He went from being a number one draft pick overall to, like, being a top 10 guy because he's, as I said earlier, he's stinking up the joint. He's not producing the way that Mike Krzyzewski and all those other cats thought he would. So that was a good point, Rev, on that deal there. I mean, I just look at this whole, you know, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire, but I'm not going to, you know, hold my coaches or I'm not going to hold my administrators or anything like that to the fire the same way. It's complete BS. Because you see the Victor Oladipos or Oladipos of Indiana on the court making money for Indiana because Bob Knight's not there, you know, who was drawing in money. You know, you see a lot of this stuff going on. Bo Ryan, Wisconsin, good coach. Wisconsin is a very good team at home with him. Wisconsin has not done well since who? Big boy. The guy, I forgot his name. He went on to coach the Pelicans. You know what I'm talking about, Rev?
Stan Van Gundy.
Say again?
Stan Van Gundy?
No. I'm talking about Wisconsin. Remember, what's his name?
Former football coach?
No, basketball coach. Basketball coach. He left Wisconsin. Then he went to go coach the Delaware Pelicans or something like that, and he died. But no, he was at Utah. My bad. I thought it was Wisconsin. He was at Utah.
Oh, Rick Majerus?
Yeah, Rick Majerus. I got my schools mixed up. But the bottom line is you have these coaches that can bring in the talent so they get carte blanche, but all these players that are bringing you the championships and all the money. Dean Smith didn't bring money to North Carolina. Dean Smith brought players who brought money to North Carolina. Mike Krzyzewski didn't bring great recruits to Army. That's why he left Army, given a job at Duke. He has a good system. That's why he's been there so long, because when his players hit the NBA, very few, and I mean very few, are productive, quality starters. Luol Deng is pretty good. Carlos Boozer was okay. I don't know what happened with him. You know, you got a couple, but not too many. But in the world of sports, especially collegiate sports, this is just my opinion again, these players are cattle. I don't care what sport it is. They are cattle. Sold off at an auction to the highest bidder. Because We'll feed them all the nice, you know, natural grass and non-treated whatever. And when it's time to take them to the slaughterhouse, NBA draft, NFL draft, we're going to make them look good for you. As long as you keep sliding me this, sliding me that, I'm going to take care of this cattle for you. So in my opinion, a union needs to take place. Really does. All right, I've talked about that for quite some time. I'm going to get off that topic. And I'm going to bring up, before I go to the Super Bowl, we had a guest on FSP Crew Show. I hope you heard it, Mike. Daryl Too Sweet Cooley was on. You remember him, right, Mike?
Yeah, I remember him.
Yeah. He was on. We had him on Thursday talking, and we were getting into what he's doing now and stuff like that. And unsolicited, because I talked about what do you think about boxers being their own promoters and the control that boxers now have. And surprisingly, because I thought he was going to, you know, be all for it, he was totally against it, and he laid blame on one boxer. You want to guess who that boxer is?
Floyd Mayweather.
Right. Yeah, and he said, you know, he thinks that Floyd could beat Manny, but Floyd is scared to fight the current Manny. And, you know, I was like, what do you mean? But he went on to explain why and how he fought all these other people that blew up in weight and stuff like that. And had no problem fighting them. Didn't ask him to get drug tested and stuff like that. And now he's saying he won't fight him because of taxes or whatever. So he went all out and all in on Floyd on this issue. I wasn't sure if you were going to call in today because I said you had a totally different viewpoint. I wanted you two guys to go at it. And it's a little too late for me to call him. But maybe in a week or so, I'm going to let you two get on the air and duke it out.
Why would you have me duke it out with him? For what? For what
because
purpose?
Because you have a totally different thought process going.
Well,
you know.
I mean, yeah, I have a totally different thought process, but the debate would be settled with me just saying one thing. That's hate. That's straight hate. That's straight hate.
I don't think he hates.
You don't think that, but from my perspective, I think that's what it is. I mean, because if you sitting up here saying that, it's a bad idea for a fighter to be a promoter, but you don't have the backing, or you didn't have the backing that Floyd Mayweather had. Then that's the only reason and logical conclusion that I can come to. But if you sitting up here saying, because I've been hearing a lot of folks like Mike Tyson, who's like one of the biggest boxing whores ever, to come out and say that Floyd is scared of Manny Pacquiao, and now I'm just hearing too many people say that, and the business part, it just don't add up. It does not correlate with what they're saying. It does not.
Okay.
I mean, Manny Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao has made less than
$15 million in the last three fights. Mayweather offered him $40 million, and he wouldn't take it. So I mean, I can't see how that. Being scared.
The inside scoop was, and I can't, you know, validate where Too Sweet got this information from, but he stated that it wasn't going to be just a test before the fight. It was going to be six to seven tests during training camp that Floyd was asking for and things of that nature. But the reason why he said what he said about Floyd was because boxing promoters that are boxers pretty much cherry pick who they're going to fight. And he says, and he uses the example, Duran and Hagler, Duran and Leonard. I mean, you know, those fighters, they fought just to see who was the better fighter. It wasn't about, you know, getting offered this money, getting offered that money. It was more about, you can listen to the show for yourself. Hear exactly what he says.
Nah, I know where he's coming from.
I know exactly where he's coming from. He's coming from the perspective of, you know, fighters should fight, and that's it. But we don't live in those times no more, man. We don't live in those times no more. It is about business. It's about business. You can sit up here and call and say that he cherry picking this and cherry picking that, but it's about business. When you're able to survive it in that type of business arena, you get more respect from me as far as that. I mean, all the rest of that stuff he doing is just talk. Period, point blank.
What you got, Rev? Open up the Bible and turn to Ephesians chapter 3, verse 24, and lay some knowledge out on this.
Well, the great Rev once said, more money, more problems, right? So, I have no issue with a boxer wanting to promote himself, because you always hear about it. Like a man said, the great Mike Tyson, this guy got raped of millions of dollars by promoters, and he's pissed
off
a guy like Don King who stole from him. So if you can self-promote, there's only one person that can promote you the way that you feel you deserve, and that's you. You know what I mean? So if you have the luxury of doing that, I'm all for it. Why not? Why wouldn't you want to do that? And as far as Floyd, I'm a Floyd fan. I like Floyd. This is the thing. I'm fair and impartial when it comes to Floyd. You know, I used to be on the flip side. I used to hate against Floyd. Look, this is the way I see it. This guy's, he said he's boxing until next year. September is like his last fight. Dude, he should fight who the fans want him to fight. He fought Canelo because that's what he said the fans wanted. So why not fight Manny Pacquiao? What's the threat of fighting Manny Pacquiao? To me, Manny Pacquiao right now poses no threat to Floyd Mayweather. So from a fan's perspective, lay this dude down, do what you do, solidify your greatness, put this guy in his grave, man, lay him down, and ain't no one going to be talking about no Manny Pacquiao. So I don't understand why Floyd won't take that fight. I don't get that. I don't understand. From a money aspect, it makes money sense. So from a fight perspective, it makes sense. So I just don't understand why Floyd won't make that move. That kind of boggles my mind a little bit. But,
well, you
like
know,
I
can see that as well. And the thing about it is that, Bradley's going to fight Pacquiao coming up, the rematch. So now Manny's looking to knock the cat out, especially after the Russian guy totally dismantled Bradley, and somehow Bradley still held on to the title. I mean, I don't get that. That was straight BS.
That was a good fight.
Say again?
That was a good fight, man. The Russian dude is a tough dude.
Yeah, he should have won. I had him winning, but somehow,
Bradley came back. Even though he was on his verge of getting dispatched in that first or second round, after that, he came back and he outscored him.
He had him on three times, dude. So you telling me that a 10-8 round, three 10-8 rounds, okay, three 10-8 rounds weren't enough of what that guy did? That's well,
yeah,
okay,
but you
we
got
see it differently.
You got to watch that fight, man. It's just like we're talking about this Pacquiao and Bradley fight. When I first watched it, because I watched it live, I was like, man, Pacquiao won that fight. You know, I thought he won that fight. But after going back and one of our buddies that we work with, FSP, Rob, once we kind of watched that fight and broke it down, I could see where Bradley kind of pretty much controlled him and outboxed him the rest of that fight. It was just, you know, all the glitz and glam, or when freaking Pacquiao would do something to him, the boxing the announcers, you know, they were just hyping up Pacquiao. The fans were getting crazy, and it was just a lot of glitz and glamour. But when you actually broke it down and watched it, Timothy Bradley still was digging into him the whole fight. You know, so I thought after that watching that, I was like, yeah, you know, they got it right. So, but like I said, Floyd. To end all the damn speculation and all the argument between fans and everybody out there, to me, There's no other fight out there but the Pacquiao fight for him to just make him solidify his greatness even more. I mean, just go ahead, do what you do, because if he dispatches the guy and knocks him out or he beats him, they ain't going to talk about Manny Pacquiao no more. Because once you lose, you know, he lost to Timothy Valley, that stole some of his thunder. And if Money goes ahead and dispatches this dude, then it would just lay him in the ground. But like I said, I think Manny Pacquiao, the interesting part is once Floyd fights whoever he's going to fight coming up here in like May, and let's say Manny pulls an upset and beats Timothy Bradley, then the interesting question is, would Floyd make that next fight in September against freaking Manny Pacquiao? That's when I think it's come in the debate again, if Manny's able to beat Bradley the second time.
I'll say this, and I said it before, but it was refreshing to hear an ex-professional boxer say it. He said, when people do not pay for Floyd's next fight because it's not the fight the people want to see, he may, at that point, decide for his last fight to fight Manny Pacquiao, whether Manny wins or loses or whatever, because that's the fight people are willing to pay $70-$80 on pay-per-view for, $200-$300 for seats. That's not even ringside. You know, it's all about e-commerce. Like Mike said, you know, hold on.
If it's all about e-commerce, then
or commerce, I should say. Not just e-commerce, but commerce.
If it's all about that, then everything that your man said is irrelevant. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Not just boxing in general. What I'm talking about is what's your boy's name? For Floyd. What I'm saying is it's all about commerce as far as, you know,
right.
the power of the spectator. If I'm not willing to pay to see his fight, Miguel Cotto or whoever, then the message is then sent that commerce speaks volumes to, because it does. It does as a promoter.
Hold on, Vic. You tying up too many dreams together. Let me tell you the part where you mixed up at. See, Floyd and them know that you ain't gonna pay for his fight. They already know that. They already know that a lot of folks don't want to pay for their fights. So it's all about finding that right type of fighter that they can hype up and get him in there to bring in the money. Look at Canelo. Canelo had a big-time connection in Mexico, right? Big time. Big in Mexico. That's what made those numbers work, right? Everybody wants to see this Pacquiao fight. Got it, get it, understand it perfectly, right? But this fight is not going to happen. It's not going to happen for way too many reasons. You got Pacquiao firmly in the pocket of Bob Arum.
Bob Arum, yeah.
Bob Arum and Showtime. And I'm sorry, Bob Arum and HBO. You got Mayweather, who's firmly in the Showtime camp. He's not really under Golden Boy. He hires Golden Boy, but Golden Boy does not want to see a fight between Pacquiao and Mayweather, because if that fight happens, Golden Boy makes no money. So they have a vested interest to make sure that this fight does not happen. So, I mean, I understand where you're going with, you know, as far as the fan perspective and that commerce and stuff like that. But Slim, I'm talking real world here. I'm talking real world, and I'm talking real dollars and real money. Understand what I'm telling you. Mayweather and Pacquiao would be one of the biggest fights on the planet, but it's not going to happen. Pacquiao and Bob Arum messed that up. They blew that. They blew that. How? Because your man said, your man Too Sweet said, Floyd Mayweather wanted him to do that random Olympic testing, right? Your man Pacquiao did not want to do it. It was like you could wind up taking the test 10 times, 12 times, 100 times before the fight. It don't matter. It's still random.
He never had that demand on any of his opponents.
A lot of his opponents blew up, just like Pacquiao. He is incorrect. He's levied that on Manuel Marquez. He's levied that on Cotto. He's did that on the last boy, Canelo. All of them did it. You know why they did it? Because they wanted that money. All of them did it. The only one that don't want to do it is Pacquiao. And to back up my point, Manuel Marquez walked into that Pacquiao fight looking like he was 29 years old. That man had more muscles and more body strength than I have ever seen him have before. And he walked in there with one of the Balco. What does that tell you, Vic? Pacquiao and them ain't say nothing about none of that. They ain't say nothing about none of that. They ain't stripped. So what that lets me know is that Pacquiao is dirty, and he will not take that indicator.
And then if you want to look at it
monetarily, Pacquiao has been falling off ever since that knockout from Manuel Marquez. He has been falling off. He hasn't been making the money.
He's honestly, now he's up here saying, please save me, please get me out of all this stuff. He's had a very good performance in his last fight.
How much money
that
did
was,
he make?
Reminiscent of what he was. However,
My point is he didn't say nothing. He didn't say nothing. I got that, but that doesn't mean he's dirty. Right, and you come walking in with one of the Balco dudes, and you look like you about 29, and for real, you 40 years old. You come out looking like you 29, and you knock me out, and I don't say nothing. Come on, man. Come on, Vic.
If you don't understand that, Manny Pacquiao, you have to look at the fighter. Manny Pacquiao and the way he is. He's not that accusatory type guy. He doesn't say, "Oh, he must be on drugs."
That's not him. That wouldn't be his way of doing it.
Now, did he think it? I don't know. You gotta ask Manny. Did his people talk about it? I don't know. You gotta ask Manny. But the fact that he didn't bring it up does not mean he's dirty. That doesn't mean that he's
Slam. I'm sorry. If you come into the ring with me and you look like you 29 and I know you 40, and you come in with one of the Balfo dudes, Slam, I am going to have a big problem with that. You cannot have a big problem with it. You cannot be accusatory like you said. You could be all those things, and you'll wind up exactly where Manny Pacquiao is. Begging for a fight with Mayweather. And like I told you,
there wasn't a big deal when nobody made a big deal when Marquez was drinking his own pee. Nobody said there was an issue with that.
But see, I told you years and years ago, Mayweather does not have to make this fight. Pacquiao needs this fight. And it's so true now.
I disagree. I mean, money-wise, you're right. He doesn't need to fight. He doesn't. But
Mayweather don't need to fight.
I'm going back to what Darrell said. You know, because we grew up during that time where a fighter was a fighter and he fought, you know, any and everybody.
That's the
past.
Listen.
I got that.
That's not bad.
I understand that's the past. But back then there was. Yes, you had Don King running everything, da 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 da.
And he screwed over everybody.
The judges were crooked. But at the same time,
screwing over your man
at the same time, you have you had fights that everybody wanted to see. You had trilogies that everybody wanted. You had Tommy Hearns and Marvelous Marvin Hagler. You had
those fights happened in the '80s. This is 2014.
I got it. But what I'm telling you is, when you have that rich history in a sport, and you know that you're the best, and I'm not debating that Floyd isn't the best, but if you have somebody that's the people see as somebody that can and probably should be able to take you out or be a threat to your throne, so to speak. Like the ref said, if it's just about, you know, I'm better than you, if it's just about, because he's got all the money, he's got all the power, he's got all the leverage,
see, it's not,
but if it's just
not,
about
it's,
me being better than you,
it's not that simple.
I know, based upon what you said, about, you know, Golden Boy, and all, I got that. But if you're a self-promoter, you don't need Golden Boy. Who just opened up their own promotion? What boxes open? I think it was
Hold on, but why is it that we gotta make an excuse to make the argument that Mayweather has to take this fight?
This is from the fan perspective. I'm buying a ticket, or if I'm buying the pay-per-view for it, or if you want me to buy the pay-per-view for it, you can hype up whoever you want. I'm not buying it.
They already know you ain't buying it.
I got that. What I'm trying to tell you is, if you can hype up whoever you want. I didn't pay to go see him fight Canelo. I thought Canelo was going to beat him. I thought he had a good chance of
talking big trash. You even
regardless of what happened,
Canelo was going to win the fight. I was like,
Listen. The point is, that's a fight that the people wanted to see. And he did exactly what the ref said. He dispatched of him. He put that one to rest. Everybody wanted to see the fight.
People paid $70, $80 to see the fight.
Hold on, Vic.
Before you get on your high horse.
I'm trying to go to football, but you keep talking about it.
Everybody did not want to see that fight. Hardly anybody paid for that fight out this joint. I told you in the beginning, Canelo had a big connection in Mexico. He was huge in Mexico. This is why the marketing of Mr. Al Heyman, that's the one you need to pay attention to. Not this whole self promotion Mayweather. That's the one you need to pay attention to. The black man with a Harvard degree. That's who you need to pay attention to. This is why his marketing was so ingenious. They know people like you ain't buying the fight, Slim, unless there's somebody else out there. And the only person out there really is Pacquiao. But they got a beef going on with them, with Pacquiao, and them, so they're not going to be able to make that fight. It's going to be hard to make that fight. And then if they do make the fight, Pacquiao is going to have to kowtow and toe the line, period, point blank. Just like I told you before.
Okay.
And
whatever the case may be, I'm in total agreement with what the Reverend said. In my opinion, as a fight fan, and I'm a fair weather fight fan. I have no problem admitting that. I am a fair weather fight fan. I'm starting to like a couple boxers because they come on our show on a regular, or they support one of my hosts. Dusty Hernandez in D.C., who just had a good victory on national TV, and Mike Yes Indeed Reed. I like those two cats. They're the D.C. area guys, and they're looking to come up. But for the occasional boxing fan, such as myself, if you want to appeal to me, you can get your hardcore. I'm going to be at every boxing match, or I'm going to watch boxing when it comes on versus a good movie or something like that. Fine. You can appeal to those all day. But if you want to touch my pockets, which is, you know, stepping out of that marketing scheme, you got to get me.
Vic.
That guy. What?
Vic.
But we're going to go to football.
Vic, I hate to tell you this, but they made somewhere in the like $600 million range without touching your pocket. So
that's fine.
They don't care.
That's fine. That's fine. They can make their $600 million. It could have been a billion. Could have been, but it wouldn't. But anyway,
it was three to four times more than any Pacquiao fight.
$1 million industry. We talking about the Super Bowl now. We're going to the Super Bowl. I was going to break down position by position. I got about 12 minutes left of live air. So we're gonna get to some of these positions and some of it in overtime. What I want to do, though, is I'm going to start off with the offense and defensive line. Okay? The whole talk about Terrence Knighting, pot roast, it's all about him going against that, you know, Max Unger and hitting Marshawn Lynch. Knighting said he's going to look up anything and everything on the internet about Unger because he's going to talk trash to him in the trenches. And he's going to get to Marshawn. Marshawn even made mention of that when he did speak a few times at the press conference. He made mention of it. But the one person that was not mentioned that I think is the biggest impact on the run game for Seattle, or two people I should say, Mike Robinson and Paris Lynn. Because if Pot Roast can beat Unger, then he's going to have to take on Robinson, leaving one-on-one with Paris Lynn and Marshawn Lynch. If Pot Roast and Unger are like in a stalemate, then it's Robinson and Paris Lynn. Because after that, if Marshawn Lynch gets to the secondary, it's going to be rumbling, stumbling, bumbling up in New York. This is the reason why Danny Woodyard has been placed on the bench, because of the run-stopping presence of Paris Lynn. Woodyard comes in from time to time. Danny Tarikian is in all the time. During the season, Woodyard was beasting out, making tackle after tackle after tackle. But that's because teams were passing on Denver because they had to come back on them. Jack Del Rio made a couple changes. He took out Vickers, who was getting a personal foul, roughing the quarterback every game ever since the Colt game. Replaced him with Jackson, a player he had in Jacksonville, Knighting, and Paris Lynn in the middle. Two significant upgrades on that defense. Now you got Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. You've got Champ Bailey. You got actual Cromartie. I can't remember his first name. Was it Quentin Jammer? I think you had Quentin Jammer out there. You've got decent safeties in Denver. But let's see how these guys go against Baldwin, Percy Harvin, Curse. Not household names. Percy Harvin might be, but not household names. One solid hit on Percy Harvin, and he's out of the game. Out of the game. But while he's in the game, I look for Champ Bailey to find him and put him in a position that's going to make it very difficult for him to succeed. That means the young upstart, Doug Baldwin, is going to have to step up even more on the biggest stage in the NFL, the Super Bowl. I think Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie can stay with him, man-to-man. I think you can defend them. But the biggest thing that the DBs have to do versus these receivers of Seattle is shed the block. Shed the block. Get Curse, get Harvin, get all these guys off of them, and make the tackle. That's the one thing Marshawn Lynch answered and said that when he was asked about his receivers, and he said they're always where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there. That's how I get long runs. So it's up to the DBs of Denver to disrupt that. Now, on the flip side, before I get to the flip side, let me get the Reverend's thoughts on that. Where are your keys, especially at position battles, do you see being the difference for Denver's defense and Seattle's offense, Rev? Rev. Cornwell. All right, I guess the Rev had to step away. Mike.
Wrong side of the ball. Wrong side of the ball.
Well, I'm talking about this side first. I'm going to the other side in a minute, but
yeah, I see
where
you,
do
but
you see?
I got nothing on that side of the ball. That's not I don't even think that's even a key or concern. Only thing on that side of the ball is Marshawn and that defensive line. That's it. If Marshawn that's it. If Marshawn break through, it's over. Game over. And
so do you
think Marshawn's going to
run the ball upwards of 30 times? Do you think Marshawn's going to run the ball upwards of 30 times?
If Marshawn gets over 85 yards, it's a wrap. It is a wrap.
I'm talking about attempts. How many attempts do you think he's going to get in this game?
I don't know how many attempts it's going to take, you know, because you got these guys jacked up to be in the Super Bowl. So I don't know how many attempts it's going to make. I can tell you the yardage. He gets over 85 yards, it's a wrap. Game over.
He can get 85 yards on one play. He can get 85 yards on one play. So you're telling me if he gets 85 yards rushing touchdown.
He's not going to get 85 yards on one attempt, Slim. He not. Like I
said, if I'm not mistaken,
he got 92 yards on that one rush versus New Orleans. These dudes are in the Super Bowl. So, Jews is going to be jacked up. You're going to see, like, in the first quarter, you're going to see some serious hits laid out. You know what I mean? They're going to be playing hard. But Denver ain't going to be able to sustain it that whole game. That's what you want to see. Around third quarter, Marshawn's still grinding it out. Yeah.
That goes back to the attempts, Mike, because Denver gets the ball first.
It don't go back to the attempts, Vic, because it could take five of them for him to get to 85. It could take for him to take 20 to get to 85.
That's exactly my point. If you're telling me, don't see 85 yards, game's over, and I'm saying that that's not necessarily the case. I know statistics say that once he gets
I'm saying that the carries, it ain't going to matter because this is the Super Bowl. And the fact that Marshawn and the Seattle Seahawks, they're going to run the ball. They are going to stuff this ball down Denver's throat. It doesn't matter how many times it takes them to do it. I understand that. That's what I'm saying to you. But for me to sit here and give you an amount of attempts, it'll be fruitless because I don't know how jacked up or how hard them boys gonna play at Denver. But I do know if they keep him under 80 yards, they gonna win. If they don't, Seattle is going to win. Period. Point blank.
I strongly disagree with that. I disagree with that because of several reasons. They're, regardless of the score, Seattle's going to run the ball, and Marshawn is going to get his yards, regardless. And there are three losses, I believe. No, two losses.
Regardless.
No, they're 13-3.
If Marshawn get those yards.
They were 13-3.
If Marshawn get those yards, Slim, that means Dibble is on the
side. Listen. In their three losses this year, Marshawn did, well, one of the losses he didn't get over 85 yards. But in two of those losses, two of the three losses, he touched the ball a lot, and he got over the 85 yards, and the team still lost. So what I'm saying is that if you have a team such as Denver who comes out smoking and puts up 17, 21 points quickly, yeah, they're going to run the ball.
They're not going to do that.
If Marshawn gets that one 85-yarder on five carries, 10 carries, whatever, how do you know? Listen.
Because it's defense, man. They have not played it. That's why I said I don't want to talk about this side of the ball. I said that before when I started. I don't want to talk about this side of the ball. It's fruitless. The only thing that needs to be done on that side of the ball is to watch to see if Marshawn is going to get stopped. That's it. Because that's the totality of the potentness of Seattle's offense, period.
So basically what you're saying is that the only thing that matters on the field when Seattle's on offense is offensive line and Marshawn Lynch. You're discounting
exactly
the receivers. You're discounting Wilson. So that's what you're saying. It doesn't matter about nothing else other than Marshawn and offensive line.
Stop talking to me like this. Of course they make a difference. Of course they make a difference, but the only thing that is important is if Marshawn can run or not. Period. Point blank.
No.
And that's
not the case. If you have a guy play one game all season, right? One game all season, and you got him in for the Super Bowl. He was your big-ticket item on the offense at receiver, okay? He's a triple threat, running, passing, and catching the ball because he's been known to throw a pass now and then, whatever, and he's good on special teams, okay? You cannot say that he is not a factor. I understand, yeah, he's fragile. I understand that he hasn't been – the weapon that they thought he would be. But you bring him in, which opens up lanes for Marshawn if he stays in the game, and he stretches the field so that Marshawn can run. He is a factor. So in order to help Marshawn, you need those guys to be productive. You need them to be productive. Same thing happened in the first quarter. I know that the 49ers lost. I understand they lost. But in that first half, it was more of, okay, we're going to shut down Marshawn. Marshawn got shut down. We're going to shut down the receivers, too. They shut him down. What got loose was the fact that both quarterbacks were able to scramble or run for yards and make things happen with their feet. Down the field, not with Marshawn Lynch. That came after the fact. I don't know if you saw the game or not, but it was tales of two different halves. First half, Seattle was, they weren't quite there. They got lucky on a penalty and threw up a ball, a Hail Mary pretty much, and Baldwin came down with it for a touchdown. But before that, Marshawn wasn't going nowhere. The offense wasn't going nowhere. So what I'm saying is if you have a team led by Peyton Manning and the weapons that he has and they go down the field and do what the 49ers did in the first half, but instead of getting field goals, get touchdowns, yeah, I'll give up 85 yards to Marshawn Lynch. I'll give him up any time because I know that your offense – isn't geared to be explosive. Now, the defensive side of Seattle, which I know you want to talk about, Yeah, they're tough. But there were holes in there that Colin Kaepernick found. I'm quite sure Peyton Manning can find those same. He's not going to run around like Cap. Yeah, we got that. But he's going to get that ball out. He's going to find the guy that Cap missed. And even Richard Sherman and the defense said there were some misplays, some miscues that happened that we can't let happen in the Super Bowl. They said that. So, yeah, we'll give Marshawn 85 all day as long as we're scoring. And we know y'all not going to be able
look,
to do
like
the
I said, like I said, 85 yards for Marshawn. I'm not changing that. That's the most important side on that side of the ball or whatever. But when you just let me know when you want to get to the other side of the ball because you're beginning to piss me off.
Really? It doesn't matter because you're not listening to the whole totality of it.
I'm not listening to you. You're right. I'm not.
What you're saying, I understand what you're saying, that if he gets his yards, they win. I got that. But at the same time, I'm debating that fact because it has happened where he's gotten his yards, still lost, whether it's a Super Bowl or whether it's a regular season game.
See,
I'm just trying to
this is why I want to start on this side of the ball. This is why I didn't want to start on this side of the ball because it makes my debate fruitless because you could just pick holes at it. But see, I don't think that Peyton Manning is going to have this stellar game that everybody thinks he's going to have. I think this defense.
Okay, so what do you think is going to happen with Peyton Manning?
I think this defense is going to disrupt Peyton Manning a whole lot more than everybody thinks. A whole lot more than everybody thinks. Because they can do a lot of things that a lot of defenses have not been able to do against Peyton Manning. You know what I mean? They can match up receiver to receiver and stop the run. They can do that. They got the athleticism.
Oh,
they got the linebackers.
What?
They got the front line, and they can get after him. They are going as long as they are. One of the two telltale signs that people should pay attention to. Number one is Marshawn. Number two is you want to watch how the refs are calling the game. If they call that game, you know what I'm saying, the way that they called that San Francisco game, advantage Seahawks. They let them boys get out there and play. Denver going to get it taken to them. Cause those boys are hungry. I respect Peyton Manning. I like him and all like that, but I've seen Peyton Manning in Super Bowls throw interceptions and lose. So it can happen. It can happen.
Okay.
And these dudes ain't no joke. These dudes ain't
okay.
No joke. If he wins this, it will not be no fluke. It will not be no fluke.
Okay. I mean, that's understandable. As far as matching up the receiver to cornerback, I disagree, and there are several reasons why I disagree. One, you got Sherman on the left side. Got it. He doesn't go to the right side, which is fine. So Sherman, what? What are you talking about? Sherman stays on the left side, and whatever receiver's on that side, that's who he's going to cover. Got it. So the left side is his domain. Got it. But then, let's say it's Demaryius Thomas there, okay? So he's going to lock down Demaryius Thomas. And Demaryius has gone through a couple games with maybe one or two catches before. I mean, that's no biggie. Then you got Maxwell covering Decker. He's done very, very well for himself the past six games. Anquan Boldin did a number on him. You know, he got used quite a bit by Anquan Boldin. But he's a very good cornerback. Then you got Antoine Winfield playing the slot, playing the nickelback, which is where you got Wes Welker. Okay. You got him there. Then you got Cam Chancellor, very good guy, very strong safety, covering the other Thomas. The tight end. It's got his first name. Okay. So that matches up really well. Only problem there is you split Cam Chancellor out on Thomas, who is faster than Cam Chancellor, by the way. He can beat him, and he has beaten him. I mean, he hasn't beaten him. I can't say that because they only did preseason, and they didn't square off against each other. But you put in that package, which is Denver's base package. That's their base package with a tailback. Seattle takes out Brandon Mebane, who is their biggest run stuffer and their biggest interior pass rusher. Anytime a team goes to the pass, if they get him off the field, they put in Bennett. Bennett is okay. Bennett is nowhere near as disruptive on the interior that Mebane is. On the outside, you got Bruce Irvin, great motor, get after the quarterback. That might be a good point right there, where you know they'll come after Peyton on the left end. Then you got Cliff Avril on the opposite side. Got it. So you got Bobby Wagner covering Noshon Marino or whoever it is, the running back, Bell or whatever. Hurry up offense. So you have two or three of your best defensive players on the sideline for most of the game because those are not their strong suits. But it's the offensive strong suits. So Mebane's out, the starting DN is out, and your outside linebacker is out because you got to play Winfield because they go three wide most of the time. The matchups are great. Advantage, I go to Denver because of their style of play. Yeah, you want, in actuality, you want a physical corner to play you if you're Peyton Manning. Why? Because you got bubble screens. You got wheel routes that you can use. You've got all these great routes that you can use against a physical corner. Because if you're going to press me, that means my guy doesn't have to go out to block you when I throw that bubble screen to Demaryius Thomas or to
Russell. Right, and Seattle is number one in tackling with, like, them short passes, them bubble screens. So you can throw them little screens all day.
That's when they're not spread out. That's not when they're spread out. If you go back and
they can be spread out. They can be spread out. It don't matter. You can spread
out.
I'm going
to tell you the two games you need to go and look at.
Seattle tackles.
No, listen. The two games you need to go look at that proves what I'm saying are the two of the three games they lost. When they lost to Arizona and when they lost to Indianapolis. This is exactly what they did. They spread them out. They hit them with bubble screens and stuff like that because they brought Cam Chancellor down. They spread the defense thin where it had to go man-to-man. They didn't attack Richard Sherman because, I mean, that's smart. He's one of the best, if not the best corner in the NFL right now. They didn't attack him. They attacked Maxwell. They attacked Browner when he was before he got suspended. They let those guys get caught up in the wash, and they threw a bubble. It was a fake bubble screen. I don't know if you remember the play, but they faked a bubble screen to Wes Welker. Demaryius Thomas blocked Sherman, and then Eric Decker wheeled up the sideline, and it was a touchdown. It was like a 45-yard touchdown because you want that physical corner to come up and attack the ball, begging them to do that because you're setting them up for those plays down the field. Peyton don't got to throw over 30 yards in this game to get a big play. And if you got Cam Chancellor covering Thomas up the sideline or in the middle of the field, and Bobby Wagner, who's the middle linebacker, locking down or coming in on Noshon Marino or Bell, then you've got one-on-one in the middle of the field with a strong safety. Earl Thomas is going to have to come down and cover one side of the field because you got they go three by one. It's a terminology. You got three wide receivers on one side, one wide receiver on the other side, and a running back or a tight end. Cornwell, I got to call you back. Still doing the show. So you bring Earl Thomas to one side, the free safety. I mean, he's going to help on that one-on-one coverage. which he did when they played what's my boy named Carson Palmer threw a long bomb up the sideline, or he's going to go to the side where there are three receivers, leaving one-on-one coverage on the opposite side. That's the stuff that Colin Kaepernick did not see when they played last weekend or 2 weekends ago. Peyton Manning sees that stuff, and they make side adjustments. So your point about getting after him, oh, yeah, Bruce Irvin and Averill, I agree with you. They're going to get after him from the edges. But up the middle, that's not going to happen. Sherman, he's going to take care of his business. We're not going to throw at Sherman. If we do throw at Sherman, it's going to be when they're in a zone or somebody. It's not going to be man-to-man coverage. Because Seattle plays a lot of cover three. They play a ton of cover three. At least they did in the last two games. And Peyton Manning knows how to beat it, and with his weapons, he can. So to your point about, you know, the advantage of Seattle having it on defense, one strong advantage, and that's the pass rush on the outside. Run stopping, Bobby Wagner, he might be able to stick his nose in there. Him and Cam Chancellor stop the run. Got it. But then that's going to leave Thomas open on a DB or on a slow linebacker. So Manning, he can put up 250 yards in this game and have four touchdowns. That's the way I'm looking at it, because of the way they can scheme against that very, very tough defense. If Indy did it and the Cardinals did it, and I forgot the other team that beat Seattle this year, but it was another team that beat Seattle this year, I'm quite sure that Denver can do it. So the only other part to talk about is the kicking game. Steve Hauschka has been excellent this year. He's been one of the best kickers in the NFL. On the other side, Matt Prater, he's been dealing with a very bad illness, so he hasn't been able to kick as much, but he's come through. But in New York, that's a different place to kick at. Different place to kick at. And by the way, historically, ladies and gentlemen, Marshawn Lynch, he does well in New York, but not too well. That's part of the reason why he's no longer a Buffalo Bill. He didn't have the same offensive line. Got it. He didn't have it. But, you know, he wasn't – I don't know if he just didn't like the area or whatever, but his best games have come as a Seattle Seahawk. And, you know, New York has never been kind to him. That's just another side note. He might be able to change that this week or tomorrow, but – I don't know. I really don't know. But your prediction for the Super Bowl, Mike, you feel that Manny's not going to have the type of game that everybody's saying he's going to have. So what do you think the score is going to be? And obviously you're going to tell me who's going to win once you tell me the score.
If it's a close game, Denver's going to win. If it's a close game, Denver's going to win. If but other than that, I feel like Seattle's going to dominate this game, and they're going to win. They're going to win something like 24-14, 17, something like that. And they're going to dominate.
Really? I would think that you would have a close game going to Seattle.
Nah.
Because of the defense.
Nah. Peyton's going to struggle in this game. He's going to struggle. If they win, it's because he was phenomenal in this game. He has got to be phenomenal in this game. I'm not saying that, you know, Peyton is not great. I'm not saying that he's not good. He is great and he's good, but he's got to be phenomenal. He's got to be phenomenal this Sunday. And I wouldn't put my money on that. You know, you can put your money on you know, trying to catch a ball to lightning as much as you possibly can. But I'm a sure better. I'm going with that defense and that running game, and I feel like Denver can't stop them from running. I just don't see it. I do not see them being able to stop them from running. I do, however, see Seattle doing enough to disrupt that offense. because it don't take that much. I understand that, you know, Denver is a well-oiled machine, but they can be stopped. It's been done before, and it's going to be done this Sunday.
I disagree. I believe that Denver's going to win the game. I think Denver's going to come out because for some reason, Seattle is a second-half team. I guess they're trying to figure out how, you know, what to do offensively and defensively to get in the groove. But once they get in the groove, they start to dominate. So that's why I think that Denver's going to come out and put up points in the first half. It's going to be a pretty big first half, in my opinion, for Denver. And Seattle's going to stick to their guns until it comes down to, like, the last quarter, and they feel like they have to put in the air. That's why I think having Percy Harvin in this game is so important, because Champ isn't what he used to be. Got it. He's not. He can take care of his own when it comes to Percy Harvin. With a little safety help, Percy Harvin become a non-factor. Then it's, like I said, lift up to Doug Baldwin, and that's Dominic Rogers Cromartie's area. So, in my opinion, in order for Seattle to win this game, and they are the more balanced team, I believe that, they are the more balanced team, but in order for them to win this game, they have to actually execute in the passing game in order to make life easier for Marshawn in the run game. So I'm picking Denver to win by 7 to 10 points. I'm looking at a 35-21 type game, very similar to what Arizona did with Seattle, whereas they came out shooting, they came out gunning, and they played very good defense, and they put Seattle in a bad position, and they just couldn't overcome it. So I see a repeat of that type of game, but this being Denver as opposed to Arizona. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to February. It's February 1st. We're about to go off the air. Check in tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, February 2nd, for the Master Plan with myself sitting in for JTATM Money and the good old Reverend who had to step away a little bit. He had to go to confessional. He'll be in tomorrow. We're going to have our Super Bowl special. We're going to talk about some UFC because UFC is happening tonight. And then on Thursday, FSP Crew Show, Jeff Black, Jerry, might be me, not we'll see, talking about anything and everything under the sun. Then on Fridays, No Chaser with Mac Williams. You're going to have Baby Shaq, the street ball player phenomenon. Baby Shaq's coming on the air. Sit down with Mac once again. Chop it up. Then on Saturday, the 8th of February, we're going to have a recap of the Super Bowl, hopefully. And we'll see what happens from there. See if we were right. See who was right, myself or my cousin. We'll see. I've been right quite a bit as of late. He likes to have his out clauses, but I don't know. We'll see. But until then, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Fantasy Sports and Politics Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with me. It's me, it's Mr. FSP. Go to fantasysportsbookandcasino.com where winners win and players play to get a wager in today. Still got time. Place a bet. Place your bets. Place your bets. And with that being said, it's time for me to get out of here. I'll catch you on the flip side.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports.